Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about home improvement on the show today. And we're going to focus a bit to begin the show for sure, and probably throughout, on solar panels and what solar energy could mean for your household. Chad Spate back with us. He owns Chad's Design Build. Chad, good to see your smiling face.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
With Chad, we also have Dieter Detling, a residential project manager for Full Spectrum Solar based in Madison. Dieter, good to see you as well.
You too, Larry. Nice to meet you. Longtime listener, first-time guest.
Well, it's great to have you with us. And as we talk with Dieter and Chad, I hope you'll join in. Are you looking to get solar panels installed on your home? Maybe you already have them and have questions anyway. The process, we're going to talk about the process, but questions about it, hope you'll join in. And then, of course, other remodeling questions. We always deal with a broad range of questions, remodeling questions on the show. And certainly if you have those, you can join in too. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Dieter, let's start with you. Full Spectrum Solar installs photovoltaic solar panels, and maybe it'd be good to start talking about photovoltaic technology, what it's all about.
Sure. Essentially, what the idea behind that is to take the sun's energy and convert that into energy that we can use in our homes and businesses throughout our, you know, community and the state. That's the simple version, right? But there are mechanics behind it, what they're made of, the silica in the cells, the photocells, combine together to create the bigger, larger solar panel. And then, like I said, that's connected to the electrical system of the building. And then the idea behind it is to try to offset what your electricity needs are that we normally get traditionally from the grid, the utilities.
And I guess, there's basic questions that people ask. How much electricity can I generate? It's probably one good one. How many solar panels am I going to need? How much is it going to cost? And the cost, it can cost quite a bit of money.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Costs have come down throughout the years as the technology has gotten better, which is great. Makes it more affordable, certainly more accessible for many homeowners and certainly businesses. Speaking of costs, there are incentives out there through both the state and through the federal government. Keying into that, the state funding is a rebate through the Focus on Energy. It's dependent on if your system that is designed and installed is eligible based on some basic characteristics, orientation to due south, the pitch of your roof or the pitch of the installation, and how much solar access is there, or shade. So that's kind of some of the statewide incentives. Could be upwards of $500 to $1,000 if in a rural setting. And then the federal incentive is the larger one. It's the federal tax incentive. It's a credit. This year it's at 26%, and it's set to go down to 22% next year, 2023. And what that is essentially, it's a credit towards your tax liability. So it's not necessarily a rebate, in your check back to you, but it's definitely substantial.
Yeah, that's a substantial amount. Chad, are you having clients asking you more about solar?
Yes, Larry, we are. We've had a handful of clients over the years that we've integrated solar into their project. We have a client coming up this fall that, full disclosure, Dieter is the project manager on that one, and they'll be putting solar panels on our client's home after we build the addition. And I have a 20 kilowatt array on my business that was installed in 2019, and that produces 100% or just shy of 100% of our electrical demand here over on the east side of Madison. And I have to tell you, I am a big advocate and enthusiast of solar power. It's just been amazing. We've produced just under 68 megawatts of power in, 3 years, 4 months, and it's doing exactly what it was designed to do. And in the spring and fall, our power bill is a negative bill because we're producing more power than we're consuming, so that in the summer months, like right, on a day like last week when it was 95 degrees, we will by and large pay for the electricity needed to cool our building while also powering tools and things like that. And then on a day like today, we'll be turning that meter backwards and selling power to the grid because it's nice and cool, but it's sunny. And just love it.
So you're looking for a payback, and this is something Dieter can probably talk about too, but your payback is going to be, the savings, 10 years?
It's
less?
Right around 10 years. Yeah. If I do just the straight math after the rebates where things were at after 2 years, I figured that it was going to be exactly 11 years for the payback. But the one thing that makes my payback, I think, slightly better than what I realize is that I have an all-electric vehicle that I use to get around town, and I fill that car up with power right here at my offices. So, that's electricity that I'm consuming beyond what I needed in the past. And I'm one of those folks that can not have to worry about what the the gas station is advertising for the per gallon price right now, because I am pulling my power right off the roof of my building.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
Dieter, Chad's there sitting at around 10 years payback. I've even seen paybacks at 7 years.
Yeah, it's definitely situational. I'm not as attuned, because I'm more residential side, to what the payback rates could be for commercial. But yeah, definitely it could be as high as that. There is fluidity, though. So we'll propose a system with a payback, maybe between 10 to 14 years, maybe 15. And there are some variability. Maybe it's a different spring or fall, and that could change things, weather patterns, but yeah, usually we're pretty spot on with our projections, so yeah, it can really pay for itself. And as Chad mentioned, he's able to get around town, get to sites in his electric vehicle powered by the sun. Likewise, we are as well with our electric vehicles. So it is a great thing to be able to generate your own energy, to be mobile, but also to be productive.
And even if you're, let's say it was going to be 10 years and you're going to sell the house in 5 years, I would imagine that having that solar would be a plus.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It can be a great, not necessarily a boon, but it can definitely help out. There are studies out there in the, Zillow maybe, that would say there's added value to, say, you wanted to sell your house in the future. That could be it's in addition to your home. So it adds value.
Quite a few callers online. Although there's still one open line, but let's go to David in Madison right now. David, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. Full Spectrum installed our solar panels about 13 years ago. And I'm thinking that I'm going to have a new roof put on within the next 4 or 5 years. Is that going to increase the cost of putting the roof on substantially? And should I be looking at replacing the solar panels at the same time?
So it's 13 years you've had them, David?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a great question, David. We do get asked that question quite a bit when we're visiting homeowners and sites to see, okay, what would we be installing on and trying to determine the age of a roof. As you can imagine, you don't want to incur extra costs after you've made that investment. So if the roof is on the older end, we would suggest before you go solar, look at replacing your roof, even if that's a little bit sooner than the roof may be needed. And also if it delays solar, you know, down the road, that's fine too, because you're obviously maximizing your value of your roof. So to your point, it would be extra cost to remove the system. It's dependent on the size, as you can imagine, a major large system, 15 kilowatt system would be much more panels than say a 3 or 4 kilowatt system. So it's somewhat site dependent, again, what the cost might be for you. But since you're one of our customers, I'm not sure who you worked with, but you could certainly reach out to me and I can try to help you out with that in terms of the cost and maybe see if you can stretch it out a little further. We definitely always advise getting second opinions, obviously from a roofer, roofing company that you trust, to see, what is the age of the roof and how much life is really left. Because I know they give ratings of 25, 35 year on shingles, but it's, I think, somewhat subjective too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There you go, Dave. And those panels, David asked about, when it comes time, would it be best to replace the panels? Are the ones from 13 years ago still okay, or are the new ones a lot better?
Yeah, great question. There is definitely technology improvements, like everything from our phones in our pockets to computer that I'm talking through right now. So there is technological advances to solar panels, certainly. It's a good question for you, because there's still life there in those panels, and many people will keep on using what they have even after they've had to remove and reinstall the system, just because do you want to incur that extra cost of a new equipment? But they are definitely more efficient now. And we can certainly help you to try to determine, the best bang for your buck, so to speak. There are new panels. I'm not sure the wattage of your panels individually, but we're, roughly between 320 and 410 we're installing for residential systems. So there's a range, and obviously that range is dependent on manufacturer and the size of the panel. So there's some other characteristics there.
Mm. David, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Todd in La Crosse. Hi, Todd.
Hello. Hi. Yeah, thank you. We actually right now, very related to what you just talked about, we have a bid for a new roof and for the solar. We're looking at getting steel shingles. I have a little concern about drilling or cutting into the brand new roof. And my main question, though, we also have a bid for putting them in the yard. We have space for that. And I would think there's some plus you could push the snow off them. And maybe if you wanted to add more panels later, if we get an electric car later. So could you discuss the pluses and minuses of a roof versus the yard? A roof does point straight south with no trees in the area.
Yeah, and you must have a pretty good sized yard then too.
We're in the country. We have space. But I know we have to mow around them. Do we want all these panels on racks in the yard? Put them to the east of the house, but in full sun.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Can you think of any pluses and minuses? Which would you recommend normally if you had a customer like that?
Yeah, good questions, Todd. If we can start with the roof portion first. You were mentioning steel shingles. We have installed on those, and I know there are other installers who have as well. We like to work directly with that roofing company because, as you mentioned, there are penetrations there. And they often want to work with us as well to find out exactly where and that it can be properly flashed. If you were to go with standing metal, standing seam metal roof, we would attach directly to the seam. So we wouldn't necessarily have to make any penetrations through the roof. So there's some subtlety there. A great south-facing roof is often ideal because those are pretty standard. They're flush mounts, and they can be a little more cost incentive to do it that way versus a ground mount. As you can imagine, the ground mounts, we have to get that electricity somehow back to your house, back to your electrical panel and the meter. So there's quite a bit of trenching depending on the how far away it is. But also that racking can be costly. We have seen price increases across the board, to be honest, but with the straight metal that we would utilize for a ground mount system. So ground mounts tend to be a little bit more than a standard roof installation.
There you go, Todd. Thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at home improvement today, we've zeroed in a bit on solar panels. We're talking other home improvement questions as well with our guest, Dieter Detling, residential project manager for Full Spectrum Solar of Madison, and Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. Clara Neipert, our on-air producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking home improvement and solar panels for your home today with Chad Spade and Dieter Detling, Chad of Chad's Design Build, Dieter of Full Spectrum Solar. Great to have them both with us today. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Josh in central Wisconsin. Josh, hello.
Hey.
What can we do for you today?
Hi, just a little bit off topic, solar panels, but I just had a question on geothermal. Say for around a 2,000 square foot house, rather than a conventional cooling system, how much more would a geothermal system cost?
That's a good question, and I don't know, Chad. What do you think? Start with you.
But it sounded like the basic question was to compare geothermal to perhaps a traditional system or to a
solar system. So if you're going to,
okay.
And I had that.
Yeah.
I would actually say I had that issue myself when I was doing this full remodel of my home 10 years ago.
Right, and I recall that you did geothermal, didn't you?
Yeah, the solar people said, you're not in a, you know, my roof didn't face straight north and south. It was east and west, and there were trees, and so we wound up going with solar. I'm sorry, with geothermal.
With the geothermal,
four 180-foot holes in the driveway.
right. Yeah, and so I could say anecdotally that because we've looked at and we've had a couple of clients that have done some part of a geothermal system. We've looked at a lot more projects to do it than have actually done it. And part of the reason for that is that geothermal systems for a single family home, it's a fairly expensive system.
Yep.
You know, for a smaller footprint building. And so I would say that typically for payback and just overall efficiency, the larger the building, the more likely geothermal is going to be worth that investment. Because, and depending, again, on a lot of variables, but there's a certain infrastructure that comes with any of these systems, and a geothermal system with everything that's required, it's a little bit harder to justify it the smaller the building is. So a large home, probably a much better payback and logic to it, all other things being equal, and certainly larger facilities, kind of commercial facilities or schools, things like that, are excellent candidates for geothermal. As you pointed out, and I'm sure Dieter could comment on this as well, comparing that to solar, it really comes down to the site because solar energy is only as good as your ability to put the panels in a place where they are going to capture a majority of the sunlight throughout the year. And like some of our callers, you know, I have the perfect site for a solar array because I have a building without any obstructions. I had a flat roof. And what was installed on that building is essentially a ballasted, grid of solar panels, which could just as easily have been put out in a field. Like they just sit on my flat roof and the ballast keeps them from, being taken away by the wind. But they're not actually penetrating my roof. And so when you have a system like that, there's a lot of advantages to being able to do that. But it really comes down to your site and comparing all the variables.
Yeah. Dieter, anything to add there?
I would piggyback on what Chad said in terms of size. A smaller size will still have that inherent cost of coming out to do the work. The electrical work is often the same. The bigger you make it, then it can be a little more cost, incentive there. It reduces the cost a little bit. So I have had some customers who have done both geothermal and solar. And I've had some other customers talk about air source heat pumps as well in terms of trying to, or mini splits, things like that, other technologies to try to go a little more electric and then have the solar used to offset that. And again, it's trying to wean ourselves off of fossil, right? Trying to get away from natural gas if we can help it. I've had some instances like that, but I really don't know the cost of geothermals. That's kind of out of my.
It's expensive. And Josh, I have a home about the same square footage as yours, maybe a little more than yours. But if I'd had my choice, I would have taken solar at the time. But just because of the site, I wasn't able to do it. So, man, I wanted to be as efficient, energy efficient and so forth as I could be when we did all that work on that house. That's why I wound up with geothermal. So there you go, Josh. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori and Shano, different question here. Lori, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I have my reality and I have my dream. So my dream is that I do want solar. I do have self-pitch, but I just got a roof 2 summers ago, so we'd probably have to go in the yard, and I do have room there. I also need a new garage, which would be great, too, because the pitch would be right. And I eventually want an electric car that would power with that electric grid. But my reality is I'll probably have to get siding before I do any of that. Is there a difference with the colors of siding you get that would heat or cool a house that would be detrimental or helpful in the winter or some? Which would be the best?
What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Typically with both roofing or siding, the darker the color, the more heat that's going to absorb. And so generally, even with our heating climate, we don't tend to build a home in a way that we're going to be able to utilize that heat if we're absorbing it. So generally, we're looking for lighter colors that will reflect the heat because that heat can potentially damage the structure depending on how it's built and whether or not it's built in a way to, take advantage of that heat. And like I say, typically there's no way to take advantage of it because the insulation layer is between that dark surface and the living space. So that's the simple answer to the question. It's something that we just want to be thoughtful about. Typically, we don't want to overheat our structures because of all the heat that they might be absorbing.
Yeah.
And I'll add that, where we see this as a real issue A lot of times with decks and the popularity of synthetic decking, we years ago, before this became a real obvious issue that we needed to think about, some clients had selected a dark colored synthetic decking that had some full afternoon sun exposure. And it turns out, you know, you're not going to be able to even walk on that deck when you have a dark color and full afternoon sun. It's just going to be too hot to habitate. So might work out great in, you know, the late fall or early spring, but you probably want to use it. It can be an issue. And so that's an example of how this can really impact your quality of life.
Thank you, Lori, for calling. Appreciate it. William and Teresa, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, my wife and I purchased a property out in Theresa this year, and we're building a home, and our home is expected to be finished sometime in November. I also have a building on the property that I use for storage for my business, and I'm looking to try to offset all the costs of electricity. Our home is going to be completely electric, and I was hoping that we could have a smaller system to start out with and then add on later as we, as I learn the system and how it operates. And that my main question would be, can I start out smaller and add on panels later?
Yeah, that's a great question, William. The answer is yes. Newer technology, I'm thinking particularly of what's called microinverters. So the inverter is what changes the DC from the solar panel or solar module to AC that we use in our homes, right? So these microinverters are scalable to your needs. And it's the only constraints are, do you have the roof space? And what is your electrical service? Is it 100 amp, 200 amp? What would we be tying into in terms of your electrical panel? So those are some limitations, I'd say. But yeah, you could start off with, say, 10 panels with 10 microinverters attached, and a larger number, certainly. And then, say, in 2 years, 5 years, when you got an electric vehicle and you've really gotten a sense of how you live in your home and how that lifestyle is fitting in and what your needs are, then you could certainly add on to. And it's also good to, whoever you, if you do go solar, whoever you work with, let them know that you're thinking that so they can make preparations for future additions to make it a little easier, to pull panels off and redo things that you've already had done. So yeah, that definitely can be added onto later.
All right. There you go, William. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Jason in Bloomer, it's your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Hello. Hey, I am halfway through an install right now. They got my my ground mount set up, and they have my panels installed. And that's at my residential home. I'm putting the system in at my adult family home. My question is, now I see that tariffs have – there was this tariff reduction or elimination. Is that going to affect the price of solar panels going forward? Because I'm wondering now, should I hold off on doing my second project until that's reflected, or is inflation going to kind of keep it steady and not move it too much?
Yeah. What do you think, Dieter?
That is the question. Jason, you asked a great question. We are still trying to read the tea leaves ourselves. We are actually, could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. We're scheduled into next year already with projects. So it kind of helps us weather the storm a little bit. But as we're trying to determine what the market trends are, we're keeping the tariff situation certainly in the forefront and trying to speculate. We're hoping that prices will come down, but it's really hard to say. Really hard to say. I wish I had a more solid answer for you, Jason. Obviously, these are big investments, so you want to make the best choice and make it as cost effective as possible. Yeah, I guess maybe one project at a time and see what early 22 or 2023 leads to.
Yeah, might be right. Chad, you might have a comment on that, but I'm also wondering just in general for, I mean, you've had to really fight through some tough increases and so forth. Is there any, in terms of just the sort of general home improvement work that you do, how's it look?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. So lumber prices have come down quite a bit from when they were hitting those historic highs, and other commodities, things like windows and cabinets, and, you know, these are all products that we are ordering and installing all the time. We've just seen kind of steady, higher than typical increases in those things because they were adversely affected by both the volatility of the lumber market, and then, you know, all the volatility that arises from the pandemic and, you know, having shutdowns, and it's harder to find people not only to work, but also, you know, to be healthy, because obviously you don't want to have people on a work site or in a factory that are contagious with a
yeah,
with COVID. So these have, you know, I guess my answer is similar to Dieter's in that we're cautiously optimistic right now. It seems like things are becoming a little bit more back to normal. But I would say that normal is a little bit more expensive than what it was prior to the pandemic. And some of that probably needed to happen. But some of it is just a reflection of having gone through this adjustment. So,
yeah,
it's a tough call to decide whether or not, you know, you want to seize the opportunity now, particularly while interest rates are, you know, still reasonably low. I like to put these things into perspective. Interest rates right now, you can still get a 30-year mortgage. I believe I read just yesterday, below 5%. Well, I mean, I remember back when mortgages were not just above 10%, but above 15%.
18%, I remember.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, everything is relative. Mm-hmm. And even a gallon of gas, you know, when you adjust it for inflation, there have actually been times when gas has been more expensive than it is today, when you adjust it for inflation. So, we're encouraging people certainly to just be thoughtful. Yeah. I try not to scare them into doing something they shouldn't do right now, because if you're not ready to do it, then don't do it. But I don't think things are going to get a lot less expensive in the next 5 to 10 years when it comes to either solar installations or general home improvements. So.
There we go. Jason, thank you again. Let's go to Brian in Hayward. Hi, Brian.
Yes, I've got a quick question, and I'd like to make a quick comment. I purchased a solar tracker system from a company called DH Solar in Prairie du Chien. It increases my efficiency, they say, by 40%. I kind of question that. I think it's better than that. But I have a question about my electrical provider. I received a letter that states that if I increase the number of panels that I have, they're no longer going to give me my current residential rate. Is there any way around something like that?
So you're in Hayward.
Well, this home's up in Lake Nepagamon, but yeah,
okay, be the same electric company, probably.
So, Brian, I just want to ask the question. I know Dieter will have more to say on this, but do you know roughly what percentage of your, electrical demand you're producing right now with your system?
I would say it's somewhere in the range of 70 to 75% of my year-round demand.
Okay.
Now, I have 18 panels on a two-dimensional tracker.
Okay. I can comment on the fact that when we were looking into doing this 4 years ago, you know, the current law in the state of Wisconsin is that you can't really produce more power than you consume on a building. Or if you do that, you know, there are a lot of things you have to, hoops you have to jump through. And so my system was very cautiously designed to make sure that we didn't exceed our actual consumption with the production that we have. And, you know, having said that, we by and large also do manage to pay for, or there have been years when we paid a large part of the percentage of our connection fee, which for a home or a business, it's a fairly substantial fee every month on your utility bill, which hooks you up to the grid. So your power bill isn't simply the power you're using, but it's also that connection fee. And now that I have a few electric vehicles, I'm not in danger of overproducing because I'm consuming more power. But, you know, that I think that's part of the concern there. And Dieter, maybe you could, I don't know if you have more to add.
Yeah, Dieter. Yeah,
definitely hit some great points there, Chad. We try to size our systems. You mentioned, Brian, that you're about 70-75% of your electricity needs offset. We try to hit like 80 to 90, 95, maybe if we're really pushing it close. And it's also dependent on what utility that customer has. So I'm not sure about your utility provider.
Northern States Power, maybe?
Dalberg Electric.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar with being penalized for adding more. But certainly if you are going to overproduce, they will buy that energy from you, certainly, but they'll probably buy it from you at wholesale rates versus what you buy it from them at retail rates. And that give and take of a grid interactive system, it's called net metering. So most of the utilities will, at some instance, subscribe to that, but they'll have their own policies behind it and rate structures. I know in MG&E, they have what's called a true-up period of 12 months. So Mass and Gas and Electric, where I am. So that give and take of energy production, it's a rolling window of, if you're going to overproduce in the summer, it can offset what you're maybe underproducing in the wintertime. Other utilities might just have a billing cycle. So you have to scale your system to make sure that you're not going to get penalized for overproducing at any given month. And so we try to really hone in on what those rate structures are. I'm not familiar with your installer that you worked with, but hopefully they were as well keying into that.
Yeah, for sure. Brian, thanks so much for that question. I appreciate it very much. Our guests today, a couple guests for you, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Dieter Detling, who is with Full Spectrum Solar. As we talk home improvement, we've zeroed in on solar. Take other questions as well. Of course, the number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking home improvement on the show today and looking at solar panels a bit with our two guests, Dieter Detling, who is a resident project manager for Full Spectrum Solar based in Madison, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. It's great to have both of them with us today. The email is ideas@wpr.org if you want to write in a question, or you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Claire, we had Linda send us an email and ask if a solar system does it have the ability to generate enough electricity to heat a northern Wisconsin home. And we got a little of that. We had a caller from northern Wisconsin just now. But Dieter, what about way north?
I would say yes. It, you know, obviously, we're talking about heat, so it has to be electric heat source as opposed to natural gas, as we were kind of talking about earlier. But it is also site specific. So is this is a cabin on a lake with a bunch of tall pine trees nearby, maybe it won't be as productive. So, you know, what are the characteristics of that site? That's what we'd want to hone in on to, you know, help determine if we can offset what their needs are. But also, you know, what is their heat source? So that's a kind of an important question to find out as well.
So I know you don't work out of northern Wisconsin. You're based in the Madison area. How does a person find a reputable solar dealer, let's say?
Yeah, great question. It's something you want to definitely find a good installer, just like any business, as Chad can attest to. There are a couple resources out there. One is called the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. They're out of the central part of the state, out of Custer, near Stevens Point. And that's an amazing resource of people who have been trying to do sustainable living, renewable energy, just a lot of good ideas and knowledge base there. They do a lot of trainings. So on their website, let me see if I have it here. It is MidwestRenew.org. You can find out information there on different installers throughout the state. I believe also they'll have some information if they're certified through NABCEP, which is the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. So it's just in our field, it's one of those certifications you want to look for. Another resource of someone that I know you guys have talked to, Chad and Larry, is Renew Wisconsin. They also likewise have some good resources in terms of just different renewable energy options, but also likewise installers in different areas.
Yeah, makes good sense. And speaking of other options, I think Don in Rhinelander has a question that might relate to that. Don, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a question about passive solar. We've got a new house we're putting up, and we're thinking about putting up passive solar on the garage roof. It's full south exposure. There's no trees. But my concern is that being up here in Rhinelander, we get quite a bit of snow, and snow melting off those panels. Am I flirting with an ice dam headache?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for the call in, Don, because I was going to add in that, you know, and when you say passive solar, of course, you're talking about siting the home or the building in a way to be able to capture that solar energy, the heat of the sun, into the structure, ideally in the winter months, and then design the house in a way that, you know, when the sun is higher in the sky, there's some shading. Am I right about that there?
We weren't looking at the shading, but we were thinking about putting in a heat exchanger where this heat coming off the glycol coming off the roof would go into our hot water system and heat the potable water for the house.
Okay. Yeah. So this is it's kind of a combination of systems that we are talking about here. And certainly when you have something like that, you do have to be concerned about snow cover. And I'm sure that there is an optimal angle for a system like that will help encourage the snow to kind of slide off of the panels. You know, I can say that, you know, with our panels, they are almost as flat as a table. I think they're maybe at a 15 degree pitch or something like that. And so every now and then, if we get heavy snow, full spectrum comes out and cleans them off for us, or we might go up there with some, you know, brooms that they've approved and, you know, clear off the snow. That is something you have to be concerned about. But every, you know, design is so important in a system like this, and I'm not sure exactly what is best for the system that you're referencing, but I did want to add the comment that a house can be built in what we used to call a passive solar way. Now there's the Passive House Institute and Passive House Standards that we've also discussed on this show.
Yeah.
It's a totally different thing, but it's related, and it just comes down to building a home in a way that maximizes the comfort for the occupant and maintains good air quality, but then minimizes the amount of energy required to accomplish all of those things.
Yeah.
So,
Dieter, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I was going to piggyback on what Chad said about slope is definitely helpful. The panels, whether they're photovoltaic, which is what we're mainly predominantly installing these days, and or solar thermal, which I think Don was talking about with the glycol and heating water. We used to install solar thermal systems. We've gone away from that just because the photovoltaic has just gotten so much more efficient. So solar panels that everyone's traditionally aware of. So we don't really do solar thermal as much anymore. But so the glass covering is called a slippery slope, right? It's so the snow, depending on your pitch, will shed at different rates. So a steeper pitch will go a little bit quicker than say a 15, as Chad mentioned. So that's something to consider. In terms of ice damming, it's also dependent on where that is situated on your roof. If it's close enough to the edge, well, chances are that might shed if there is snow, shed off the roof quicker, as opposed to just sitting there right at the end wall near the soffit, in which case that's where we see ice damming a lot of times. The other thing I wanted to mention is about snow. In Wisconsin, we get these days where it's like freezing rain and it's snowing and then it warms up and all that. So we tend to recommend not doing anything with solar panels when there is any snow cover. Just let nature do its course. The panels that we're predominantly installing now are black on black. So they have a black frame with a black sheet. As soon as that sun starts to catch the edge of those panels, it just brings the snow covering inside and it'll melt it and shed it naturally. We have heard instances of people, getting up on the roof with a leaf blower and things like that. Definitely don't do that. Chad's roof is flat, so that might be a little safer, but we want everyone to be safe. And I think the best way is to let nature do its course shed that snow naturally. And conversely, in the summer months with dust and pollen, let rain wash that off. The worst thing you could do is, I think it was referenced earlier about a snow rake, take a rake to that panel and permanently scratch it, thus permanently diminishing that productivity of that panel. So you want to be careful there as well.
There you go, Don. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Paul in La Crosse. Paul, hi.
Hello. I guess a lot of the things that are just mentioned have been kind of surrounding my question is with regard to heating. Is solar heating of water better for like a water heater than using the same amount of square footage in solar panels to heat the same amount of water?
Okay, Dieter?
Yeah, that's a good question. From what I understand, just hearing the owners of my company, they set it up. The two brothers are Burke and Mark. They're both engineers. They went to UW. They kind of set this up in tandem to be solar thermal and photovoltaic solar. And as I was mentioning, it just got more and more cost effective to go with the route of photovoltaic, just because the efficiency of those panels have increased so much, but also the cost has come down substantially over the past 15 to 20 years. And so those two, you can't shake that when you're dealing with that. And then maybe the cost of solar thermals not dropping as quickly. You couple with a photovoltaic system with, say, electric water heater, and it will offset that electric needed for the water heater. So that's probably a more cost-effective way to go at this stage in time.
Yeah. Chad, looks like you're nodding in agreement, too, on that.
Yes, that's correct.
There you go, Paul. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. What do you think of the SPAN system to best manage all electricity using? Jerry sent an email on that. The SPAN system, are you familiar with it?
I'm not familiar with that. SPAN, S-P-A-N.
Yeah, I tell you what, we have to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. So maybe you can take a look online at maybe a name that you're familiar with on a different name, Dieter. Oh, man. Dieter Detling, a residential project manager for Full Spectrum Solar. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, our guest. They'll be with us right up to 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we will be back with our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, we've zeroed in on solar panels a bit with our two guests, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, and Dieter Detling, who is residential project manager for Full Spectrum Solar based out of Madison. He has spent the last 23 years, I believe, promoting sustainability in multiple roles. So great to have him with us today as well. Lots of callers online, but I want to go back to the question that Jerry had sent us about the SPAN system, which I believe is a smart electric panel. Dieter, did you look that up or Chad?
Yeah, I tipped my hand a little bit. I did not. I wasn't familiar with the brand. I haven't personally worked with it, but I am familiar with this kind of newer technology for electric panels. And I think to his question, what I believe it was, what can compatibility, what can work with it? That's a great question. I know that that particular brand, it seems like it works with a couple of the larger solar equipment providers or manufacturers in the industry. Everyone's familiar with Tesla, of course, but SolarEdge is another one that does home backup, and they have large inverters. I talked a little bit about micro inverters, but I didn't talk about inverters. That's the traditional form. They're larger, their size to the system, so they're not as scalable. But they also have newer inverters will have optimizers that somewhat work like micro inverters. So in each individual panel up on your roof or on your ground mount will be optimized, as the name implies, to be the best, most efficient panel it can be. You know, if there's shade on one end of the array, it doesn't affect the other side of the array. So compatibility, I would definitely, whoever you're working with, Jerry, make sure that, you know, they are familiar with what equipment they're using. Again, I'm sorry, I'm not as familiar with SPAN particularly. But I think it's there's so much newer technology that's coming out that it's pushing the envelope. It's great in terms of, you know, how we're using our energy and being able to modify our lifestyle accordingly, I think is brilliant. Those are things that maybe could be done before you get solar, and maybe you can become more efficient with your home and your lifestyle. And then from there, figure out what you need to offset. So it's part of the spectrum for sure.
Let's go to Eric in Sussex next. Eric, hello.
Hi, good morning. I have two related questions. My site is going to need a pole-mounted PV system. Could you talk a little about bifacial panels where they generate power from the backside as well as the front side? Is that something cost-effective? Is that worth investigating? And then the second half of that is sizing the system, you know, and this penalty with utilities for generating too much power. Why is it not possible with microinverters and all the rest to disengage panels as needed if you're generating too much power and just not be feeding it back into the grid if you've already hit your limit for the month?
Hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
No, good questions. We'll start with the bifacial panels. So typically we'll be installing, in most instances, monofacial monocrystalline panels. And that's because we're installing flush mount to the roof. The idea behind bifacial is it can use some reflectivity from the roof covering, if assuming it's not right on the roof, say in your ground mount application. There can be some ambient light hitting from the underside of the panel. Again, using maybe a reflective surface on the ground. I've heard of people using white landscape rocks or other type of white reflective material. So I think whoever you're working with, your installer, it might behoove you to, you know, see what the modeling would, what they can provide on the modeling and see what, how productive each system might be. If you went with the traditional panel versus the bifacials, like you said, that would be the way I would try to help a customer out, just to see, is that really cost effective for what the output will be? So that would be the answer to that question. And I'm sorry, your second question was?
Right. My second question is about overproduction and kind of the utility penalty for doing so. With microinverters and conditioners and stuff now, is there not a way to just temporarily disconnect the panel electrically, once you've reached, you know, your production limit, and not be backfeeding the grid with it, but just let it run open?
Great question. Yeah, it is a bummer that we're, you know, different, as you put it, penalties for overproducing and feeding back into the grid to offset, say, someone else's energy needs. I have heard anecdotally of some folks say there are multiple electrical strings for the array where they might flip part of the breaker off. You know, there's multiple breakers, so they might flip a breaker off to lower their output and their needs. That's a lot of management than most people want to do. So I wish there was a easier way, say through the monitoring platforms that a lot of the inverter companies produce, so you can watch your production. I wish there was a way where you could dial down a couple panels, kind of like you would on a sound booth or something like that. But as far as I know, I don't know of any of the platforms that do that. So you have to be a little more manual about it. And or I've heard customers even shutting their system off for a couple of days just to, you know, not go over that monthly threshold. So it's, I wish there was better technology out there, to your point.
Eric, thank you so much for calling. Owen, who's on Route 39 in Portage. Owen, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, so I have a few questions related to off-grid solar. We sold our house a little over a year ago where we were paying about over $200 a month in electric back in Connecticut. Now my wife and I live in our Sprinter van, which is great. We love it, and we love the solar. But when I had a problem last year, it was so hard to find anybody who could work on off-grid solar. I ended up contacting the Amish place up in, I think it was in Michigan. But we didn't end up working with them. But one question is, you know, where do you find, you know, I met a couple of itinerant people, but, you know, is that the only way to find people who work on off-grid solar? And the second is, this is a more practical one, is I have 600 watts on the roof, a 700 watt inverter, and a charge controller, all Renogy. Is it going to be easy to upgrade to, like, say, 2000 watts inverter so we can maybe have a coffee machine plugged in? And the other thing is, how can we get to an air conditioning unit? Would that work in solar? And the final question is, in the future, might there be more efficient and even expandable kind of flip-up solar panels that could be used on vehicles to really up the amount of off-grid solar?
Hmm. Quite a bit there, yeah.
No, as you were describing the last portion, I was envisioning the new space telescope and all it took to get that to be productive and into space. So in terms of resources, I personally don't do any off-grid work. Our company does not. But I know, again, a shout out to the MREA the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. This is something that's they've definitely dealt with, whether it's a mobile in your application or just a homestead or a farm that's off grid, or just a regular house. I know that they would have some resources that I would suggest checking in with them. Again, that was MidwestRenew.org is their website. So in terms of expandability, I think one thing that you have to always think about is, do you have the space, on your roof or in your electrical, components, your electrical system to expand. So that would also be the thing. I'm not familiar with the type of equipment you're using. So that, again, it's a little bit out of my realm, but that would be something I would wonder if you have that capacity.
Hmm. There you go, Owen. Thank you so much. I would get in touch, as Dieter was saying, with the MREA, Midwest Renewable Energy Association. You're probably going to find some good information from them about directly the question you were asking about with off-grid solar. Tony in Athens, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. In 2013, I installed an 8.3 kilowatt system. I've since way outstripped the capacity of that system, and I want to expand. But at the time, I received a federal REAP grant through the USDA. I have a small rural business, and a Focus on Energy grant. I wonder what the state of incentives are currently, if you feel like it's a good time to maximize solar, how much have costs dropped since 2013 as well? Like, if I want to go from 8-kilowatt system to a 25-kilowatt system, what am I looking at? Are the incentives there?
Good question. So speaking of the state incentives, the main one is Focus on Energy rebate based on your zip code, actually. So they deem some zip codes being rural predominantly, and so they actually give an extra $500 to that rebate, and the standard is $500. So you could get up to $1,000. The REAP incentive, I'm not as familiar with, so I don't know if you'd be eligible again. I think a lot of incentives, if you're adding on or you're building anew, certainly you can be eligible for. So possibly, it sounds like you're hoping to more than double your system. I'd explore that as well. I'm sorry, I'm not as familiar with that, but there are the federal tax incentives, of course, for your tax credit. And that's 26% again this year, going down to 22%. And there's a few of us think that they may do some 11th hour work and freeze it again, as they have in the past, but that's to be seen, of course. So I'd look into those. And the costs have definitely come down since 2013. That's definitely clear in my mind. They have gone up a little bit, as Chad mentioned, in the past couple of years, just based on production and, do we have workers to make the product, shipping issues, all those things that we're seeing across the board in many sectors. So costs have gone up, but I think in general, they're below where you initially installed that 8.3 kW system. So I would definitely check in with some, I forget where you were located, but check in with some installers near you. Again, you could check the Renew Wisconsin website or the MREA website to find some certified installers and get some quotes and see what your options are.
There you go, Tony. Thank you so much for calling. Diane in Montfort, we'll go to you now. Thanks, Diane, for calling.
Hello. I've got a couple of questions. First off, the one I called in about is my daughter moved into a home that has in-floor heat in the basement, and it's run with a gas water heater.
Okay.
And the gas water heater is dying, and so it needs to be replaced. I was curious whether that could be run by solar.
Yeah, that's a great question, Diane. We kind of talked a little bit about this, but not specifically this for in-floor heating. That would be, I think, a good transition to an electric water heater, which then could be offset by the production of the solar panels. It's not a blanket statement. I think we'd still want to, whoever you'd work with, find out how productive your home could be for solar, whether it's a rooftop insulation or a ground mount insulation. It's always site specific. Shading is always an issue, or lack thereof, if as the case may be, then it's great. So we'd want to find out about that. And then what are your needs already? So if your needs are at a capacity or high enough where we would be filling up your roof already, then maybe we won't be able to offset that additional electric load, but at least you might come out the same. It's very subjective, as you hopefully can tell.
There you go, Diane. Well, Barbara in Boscobel, we'll go to you. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I have a house that has too much shading, and I wondered if it's possible to install solar panels vertically on a silo.
Have you ever done that, Dieter?
I have not seen that. That's pushing the envelope, Barbara. I love it. I have not seen that. I know people have asked about installing on walls. You would want to have ideally a pitch to it, so not just vertical, because solar panels will always work in the optimal way if the sun is hitting them perpendicularly. So obviously a fixed roof application, that's not always going to be the case, as the sun's arc in the sky is different times of the year. The vertical application, I'm just thinking, could you somehow pitch it with some racking or something? I'm not familiar with any products like that. I don't know, Chad, if you've seen anything like
Chad,
that.
Chad, have you ever seen anything like that?
On your end?
I mean, you certainly could envision, some sort of metal rack that would mount to that wall and I don't know, it would be like effectively creating awnings with the solar panels. And then rather than your typical mounting on a horizontal where they're, stacked out horizontally, they could be stacked out vertically. And you obviously have to be concerned about shading and things like that. But it sounds like a great kind of experimental project.
I could see them right all the way around so that they would be capturing the sun no matter where it was.
Right.
Maybe not north, right? But yeah.
Right.
Yeah, maybe not north. Barbara, there you go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Fred in Wheaton.
Yeah. I was wondering, you've mentioned a couple times that there's this policy that restricts your production to that which is produced, like, say, by a household. Where did that policy come from? Is it state or federal? Who pushed for that? And are there any opportunities, or is anyone working to change that?
Yeah, Chad, you talked about that earlier, so I'll let you go ahead again.
Sure. Well, that is regulated at the state level, and that is a combination of state law and, in our case, it's the regulator of the utilities. Help me out here, Dieter. It's the
Public Service Commission.
Public Service Commission. Yes, I was only remembering the initials. The Public Service Commission essentially is making that decision, and these are political decisions. So I guess what I would say is if, folks want the policies to be different, then you reach out first and foremost to your elected leaders to see if we might be able to push the envelope on that a little bit. I mean, they're setting the rule that right now, basically, you cannot overproduce for the given location. And I know I dealt with this also as a former alder in the city of Monona, we put in systems on buildings there, and we had to be concerned about overproducing for a given building, even though we had, you know, let's say 20 buildings, and we wanted to put the systems on five of them. And we tried to argue that, well, you know, we're producing power for all of our buildings. And there was some sort of accommodation made for that. So obviously, you know, there could be a day where homeowners are able to produce twice the power that, or, you know, it's like that is a, that is set for a variety of reasons. Obviously, utilities are protecting, you know, their interests. They want to not suddenly be competing with large homeowners that, or homeowners that put in large systems. So clearly there's a balance to be had here.
Well said, Chad. I would just chime in that, yeah, the PSC, that they govern, or Public Service Commission, they are the governing arm. They regulate the utilities. So those, that board on the Public Service Commission, as Chad alluded to, is appointed by political figures. So, you know, read into that what you will. So it's I forget what their term is on their on the board, but it's a 3-person board. So that's something that we should all be aware of, certainly, because it impacts us all. And the utilities are different. They have different standards or structures in terms of the net metering. So depending on where you are and who your provider is, you know, it might be favorable. It may not be as favorable. So there's some variance there.
On the face of it, you just, it would seem it'd be nice if just everybody could produce as much as they as they could produce.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree.
And so it sometimes it just doesn't make sense on the face of it, I guess.
Right. I guess. You know, I'm hopeful, Larry, that with you know, the Public Service Commission has allowed the utilities to raise their flat fee for providing service and for having customers connected to the grid, and so I think we are in a transitional period where the utilities are going to be more the folks that connect us all rather than necessarily producing all the power. And it's conceivable that, you know, 20, 30 years from now, we could be in a spot where a lot of the power is actually produced all over the place and the utilities just connect us so that if your system isn't producing, you can get it from somewhere else. I mean, that's what we have now, except the utilities are the primary producers. So there you have it.
There you have it. Well, on that note, Dieter and Chad, thank you both so much for being with us today. It was a lot of fun, and I hope we do it again down the road. Dieter Detling is with Full Spectrum Solar of Madison. Chad Spate is owner of Chad's Design Build. And by way of full disclosure, both of those companies are some of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. So that's great, too. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk. We'll take a look at midsummer weeding and planning for a fall vegetable harvest. Thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.